Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire Signature NHL Hockey Pod Podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. Now, normally we don't look and talk about Monday's action too much, but this week there was so much to choose from last night's action. I'll just rhyme off a bunch, and then, partner, you can pick whatever you want to talk about, and we'll go at it in depth. We'll touch the other topics during the course of the show. But off the top of my head, I saw the returns of Malkin and Sagan. The improbable scoring exploits of McDavid and Matthews are nearing ridiculous totals that we thought were out of sight. The NHL's resident bad boy Tom Wilson is at it again in Washington. A storybook debut for Cole Caulfield in Montreal. A feel-good debut story in Buffalo as a 28-year-old rookie goalie Michael Hauser wins his NHL debut and the playoff race upstate. I'll leave it to you, partner, to pick any of these storylines to open the show, but we'll touch on all of them, as I said, in today's episode of Puckcast. So where do we begin, AJ?
I want to talk about, right? Obviously, Malkin, as our listeners know, and Cole Caulfield's a UW Wisconsin product. But look, we have to talk about Tom Wilson. Like, this is just unacceptable. You know, I a lot of people are going to talk about the fact that Artemi Panarin was hurt in that scrum. And I do think that is an important aspect here. But really, it all begins with what kicked this whole thing off. Like, he, first off, he kind of like drives Pavel Buchnevich into the ground, like into the ice, like by the neck, which is first wrong thing he does. Then he punches him while he's down. You basically have a guy pinned down to the ice and then you punch him. So of course the Rangers jumped on him. Like, why wouldn't they, you know? And all this, of course, starts, you know, Peter Laviolette wants to say, well, you know, it was a goalie, you know, scrum around a goalie, happens all the time, blah, blah, blah. There's one thing to defend your goalie, clear guys out, and these scrums do happen all the time. But, like, punching a guy who's down on the ice multiple times, like, that's not cool. Like, he throws Panarin to the ice and then hits him a couple more times. Like, I remember, I very distinctly, I saw a fight one time with Zdeno Chara, going up against a smaller guy. He, you know, they're punching him. Char gets him on the ground, pulls up his fist like he's going to punch him again when he's on the ground, and he stops because he respects the fact that his opponent is on the ice and he's down. Tom Wilson never does that. You look at it. Here's his quotes from last time. This is after his previous suspension. At the end of the day, it can't happen. I can't be missing seven games. I can't be missing one game. I've got to be in the lineup. And he follows that up with, a lot of people probably wouldn't believe me, but you never want to see a peer get injured. You're right, Tom. A lot of us don't believe you. You just punched a guy on the ice after driving him into the ice in the first place. Then you throw another guy to the ice and continue pummeling him. Like, the league, I think the league needs to say, you're done for the year, buddy. Yeah. You've already been suspended once. We don't want you back. Good riddance. Washington, figure your crap out and get this guy. And we won't even talk about the tweet that they sent out after this whole thing. That was disrespectful to begin with. You can go look it up. This tweet was garbage tweet by the team, and it just goes to represent everything that they stand for and will, you know, do when it comes to defending Tom Wilson. Laviolette's comments after the game were trash. The team's Twitter account is trash. And Tom Wilson leads the way in terms of garbage NHL players. And I hope they just kick him out for the rest of the year. I would be fine if they wanted to ban him for life. We know that's not going to happen, but I think it should. At minimum, he needs to be done for the year.
AJ, I couldn't agree with you more, and I didn't want to interrupt you because you seemed like you had it all covered in good full rant. His behavior is not representative of what the NHL wants to see in the league, and you know, it's terrible what he gets away with in a game like last night. But largely, it's because of the fact that the Rangers don't have a heavyweight to protect their team. And that's why this guy ran amok last night without fear of getting any retribution. And that's why teams like Toronto, they get Wayne Simmonds in the lineup, because people will think twice before looking out and saying, oh, if I do this, I might have to pay for it on the ice. But you're right. I've had enough of this guy, and I've seen enough of this guy, and I don't need to see any more of him this year for sure. And I hope the NHL does throw the book at him. In terms of the tweet that they put up, yes, it was a terrible message that they sent after the game. It's so bad, in fact, that they have actually came to their senses and took it down, AJ. So, sadly, we can't refer to it specifically or verbatim today unless we go from memory. But it was terrible, in terrible taste. And the coach, sure, he's going to defend his players, but that action was indefensible. I don't even see it anymore when I watch wrestling. That's how bad it was in terms of the egregious nature of the whole episode. And I say they throw the book at this guy and don't look back. He's got a litany of things on a rap sheet in his career, and this might just be the cherry on top. And I've seen enough, like you. So goodbye and good riddance would be a message from Puckcast in this corner from both of us today. So now that we got all hot and bothered to start the show, AJ, we can go into our rotation of news and notes around the league. And normally, one of the other headlines we didn't even touch on in Anaheim was the announcement that Ryan Miller is going to retire at the end of the season. I know that this is a player that's near and dear to your heart, with roots in Buffalo and a long, distinguished career as one of the maybe the top U.S. goalie in hockey history. He's leader in several categories for all goalies from born south of the border here. And a tip of the hat from me, I saw more than enough of this guy breaking my heart against the Leafs for years, and just an outstanding citizen by all accounts. And I'll leave it to you to rebut that, but we got to go through other notes there. John Gibson, the de facto number one, is back on the top of his game. This is a team that was 2-2 last week. They're going to finish last in the West, but 4 goals against in 2 games. It's typical of what Gibson gives these guys, a chance to win every night, even though they've got a pop gun offense. Consider that of their 3 leading scorers last week, one's a raw rookie in Zegras, getting a goal and 2 assists. Cam Fowler having a decent season with a goal and 3 assists, and Danton Heinen with 1-3. And other than that, not much going on here. Zegras, for his part, playing center minutes on the second line because Adam Henrique is now in COVID protocol. This is a team that just wants the season to end, but there are a couple of nice debuts with Zegras, and then Jamie Drysdale, an 18-year-old defenseman, flashing some offensive skills with another goal and assist last week, getting more minutes with veterans Manson and Lindholm sidelined. But I know you want to say a few words about Ryan Miller.
Yeah, absolutely. As you alluded to, the winningest U.S. born netminder in NHL history has about 20-25 wins more than Tom Barrasso there. And really, you know, the year of, as they, you know, referred to it in Canada as the golden goal year, you know, really the U.S. shouldn't have been in that game. I think it was really on the back of Ryan Miller that they got there in the first place, you know, before Sidney Crosby broke U.S. hearts and conflicted the hell out of mine, because, you know, I cheer for the guy all the other time. But yeah, you know, Ryan Miller just has been a class act throughout his career, you know, both as a starting netminder in Buffalo, you know, Vancouver, and then, you know, coming in and willingly accepting the backup role. We never heard anything out of Anaheim that he was upset or disgruntled. You know, he really fit into his role there. It's a bummer to think about an NHL without, you know, without Ryan Miller kicking around there. And I think a great way to end his career. I'm sure they'll give him probably the last game of the year to close out their season and finish on a highlight on that end, as the rest of the season hasn't been much of a highlight. Speaking of lack of highlights, we'll talk about the Arizona Coyotes, currently sitting 5th in the West after a 1-2-1 week. They're going to need to be better than that if they're going to track down that last spot, you know, in the playoffs here. They're starting to get to the point of no return, and honestly, they probably are. The Blues have 3 games in hand on them and a 5-point lead, so really it's all in St. Louis's court to close out the year. As far as Arizona goes, 3 games played for Darcy Kuemper, no wins, 10 goals allowed. Aiden Hill got a shutout in his lone appearance of the week. And really, this is another team that, you know, just every year with Arizona, it's right around the edges, you know, and it looks like there's maybe one more piece. You know, it was Phil Kessel was going to be that one piece that they added to get them over the hump. And every year it seems like they're just one piece away from becoming a playoff team. And this will be another disappointing season for the Yotes fan at the end of the day.
Well, it looked like the Boston Bruins might have to fend off some pursuers for fourth place, but now after a 3-0 week, they seem to have secured their playoff spot, AJ. So we know the four combatants in the division that you care about the most, and that should be a real tussle in the first two rounds there. We'll get to that in our playoff previews in a couple of weeks, but something to look forward to for sure in this division. Tuukka Rask looks like he's back in top form. Two game starts last week, both wins, and only three goals against for him. Craig Smith had a hat trick, so he's solidifying his place as a second line scoring winger here. It hasn't hurt him that Taylor Hall has arrived and completed the look on that second line with Krejci, as the whole line went off for, let me do a quick math, 7 for Krejci, 4 for Hall, and 5 for Smith. That looks like 16 points on the week for this trio, and in a second-line scoring role. They've been looking to solidify this unit for a long while, but I think they've got their mix now, and certainly the notorious right winger on the top line had another nice week, 2 goals and 2 assists for him. Charlie McAvoy on defense, leading the parade from the blue line, but it's been a blue line that's dealt with injuries. Brandon Carlo, it looks like he's ready to rejoin the club. He's been a full practice participant for a few days and should be ready to play later this week. He's been out since April the 1st, so that'll be a big addition. They already recently got Matt Grzelcyk in the lineup coming off the IR, and he's chipped in offensively with 3 points in his last 7 games played. They really missed him. So I think all hands are approaching on being on deck, and this will be a tough out for any team that opposes them the first round, and it could be your favorite club, AJ. But your thoughts on the Bruins, and then lead us into Buffalo.
I think the interesting thing to come out of the last few days is that it looks like they're potentially bumping Jeremy Swayman up to the backup role over Yaroslav Halak. And so it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think Swayman may have convinced them of one, their future, which we've talked about previous weeks. But also, I think if Rask struggles at all in the postseason here, we might see Swayman start a playoff game. You know, it doesn't look like Rask is having any issues. He had a really good week. But it's just something to monitor that it looks like maybe Swayman has played himself at least into number two on the depth chart. Look, if you got to talk about goalies, Buffalo is the place to go here with no less than their 5th string guy starting last night. Michael Hauser makes his debut. Look, they had to get an exemption from the NHL to sign their backup AHL goalie to a professional tryout, Stefanos Lekkes. And then this season, you know, they got rid of the e-bug this season, the emergency backup goalie, because of COVID protocols and everything. And so that's why there always has to be a goalie on the taxi squad this year to help alleviate that if you ever needed a third goalie to come in a game. Well, they got to the point where not only did they have to sign this guy to a PTO to serve as the backup, they got clearance from the league that Mike Bales, the goaltending coach, was going to be their emergency option if something came up. You've got Luukkonen is out, Tokarski is out, Omark is out, although he was at practice, so could be nearing a return there. And then Carter Hutton, of course, done for the year. So just banged up goalies all the way around. It shouldn't be a surprise to see they went 0-3 last week as a result. I don't think this team's going to rack up too many wins down the stretch here. And really, in terms of fantasy season long, you obviously haven't been using these guys much, even in DFS. Maybe one or two guys you could pick, but otherwise stay away from this club right now, or stack against it might also be an option. Although I should say they did get the win last night over the Islanders.
In terms of DFS play, AJ, this might be a team that you look at the opposing goalie every chance you get, but you know that they're going to be a large share of ownership on those players in those circumstances. We can talk about that when we get to the DFS segment later in the show. In Carolina, this is a team that's ticking and bopping along in first place, holding off the Tampa Lightning for now. They're 7-0-3 in their last 10 in Carolina. All things are looking good. Consider Alex Nedeljkovic stretch with two games played, two wins, and only two goals against. Even backup James Reimer with a win and two starts and only five goals against. They don't need to score very many goals to get their wins here, but they're getting a lot of offense, and it hasn't hurt them at all that Toivo Teravainen finally rejoins this lineup and reforms the potent partnership that he has with Sebastian Aho. Aho had 7 points in the week, Teravainen three. McCormick chipped in with two goals, Stahl with a pair of goals and a couple of helpers, Zvechnikov with five assists. I told you offense wasn't a problem. Even Brett Pesce continues a very nice year on the back end with two more assists, and rates consideration as one of the finer two-way defensemen in the game, in my estimation. There's still no timetable, though, about a timeline for Peter Mrazek's return from injury, and of course, the Hurricanes would certainly love to have their number one goalie in tow, but he's had an injury-plagued season, and despite that, they're rolling along in first place. There's also injuries to the left-wingers Paquette, Fast, and Martinook, leaving the depth chart a little thin on the port side, and that might be the biggest concern they have as they get ready for the playoffs.
I'm going to disagree with you, Paul. I'm not sure they want Peter Mrazek back because it's going to give them a headache as to what to do between the Nets come the playoffs, because how do you not put Nedeljkovic in? I think you have to at this point. So if Mrazek's not available, at least that's one headache that you don't have to deal with. In Calgary, there's plenty of headaches to go around after a 1-2 week. Markstrom, three games started, just a one win there, five goals allowed. A little bit of production out of Elias Lindholm with three goals to Chuck, three assists. But otherwise, a pretty quiet week offensively for this club, and it's getting down to the nitty-gritty for them. They have six games left, so technically they're not out of a playoff spot, but it's looking pretty thin there as they're 10 points back of Montreal. This will be a disappointing season for them. I think they paid up big in the offseason to bring in a guy like Markstrom. Chris Tanev was another guy they brought over for a pretty hefty price tag in free agency, and I think they were prepared and expecting to make at least, if not just a playoff appearance, a deeper run here. So they're going to have to go back to the grindstone here. Obviously, the coaching change midseason wasn't a good sign that they were headed in the right direction. Where they can go from here is certainly a question mark to me. It seems like all the pieces are there, but they're just not putting it together. And it's hard to see a way out for Flames fans right now.
You know what? You nailed it. And we knew at the beginning of the season one of these teams would be very disappointed with a non-playoff situation. And it turns out it looks like it's going to be the Calgary Flames. In recent weeks, Matthew Tkachuk's play has tailed off. And this guy's a leader of this club, AJ. And maybe it's a telltale sign that when his play leveled off, that this team really went south. And their top scorers really didn't deliver the goods either, except for a brief blip that we highlighted last week when we saw a little bit of action from Gaudreau to lead the pack offensively that week. But it hasn't been consistent enough to salvage the season for them. And so they're going to be on the outside looking in. I don't think there's any doubt at this stage. They have very faint hopes. They got to run the table and hope that either Montreal or Winnipeg just goes over the rest of the way. That's their only chance right now, the way I see it. In Chicago, this is a team that for a while thought they had a shot at a playoff spot, but they're now slipping to sixth in the Central Division. They went 0-2-1 last week. Lankanen, their goalie, who had a good stretch earlier on, is now looking a little tired to me, AJ. He had three game starts last week, didn't get any wins, and allowed 12 goals against. So maybe he's hit a bit of the rookie wall that happens to so many players late in their first NHL campaigns, particularly goalies, too. But up front, the news is still very positive as youngsters, Kubalik, two goals and assists, DeBrincat, two goals and two assists, the venerable Patrick Kane, four helpers, Hagel with a goal and two helpers, Gaudette with a goal and two helpers, Kirby Dach with a goal and two helpers. So the young brigade of offensive pieces is certainly coming together and doing their part. They've got to learn more of a 200-foot game, though, to help their goalie situation. Kurashev right now is a guy to watch, another youngster. He is getting the plum assignment between DeBrincat and Kane. If you're looking for a stack of the Hawks' top line, he comes in cheap while the other two guys will cost you a little bit. So maybe you can squeeze the three of them in when the Hawks are playing and firing on the offensive cylinders that we've highlighted. I like the fact that Dylan Strom has been moved back to center, albeit on a third line. Well, it's a chance to lengthen the offense, I guess. And on defense, another youngster, Wyatt Kalinyuk, has been a revelation back there, now paired with Duncan Keith. Maybe that has a lot to do with his success. But he has 4 goals and 3 helpers in his last 10 games played, now approaching 20 minutes per game. So maybe they're finding another piece on the back end to go with the youngsters that are lighting it up front. This guy was a 7th-round pick in 2017. To me, that's like found money at this stage, 4 seasons later. This guy's making his great strides in the NHL. So despite a 6th-place finish, what looks to me like the future getting brighter in Chicago.
Well, Paul, you're the only one on this podcast that's surprised about Kalynuk here. He's a UW Wisconsin product. We knew here in the home of the Badgers that he was going to be good. Look, the best news for me with this guy, he was a 7th-round draft pick by the Philadelphia Flyers. Didn't end up signing with that organization. Instead, hit the free agent pool and signed with the Blackhawks instead. And so that's a huge boost for me. I hate to see Badgers go play for the Flyers. It really hurts my soul to have to cheer against guys like Brian Elliott. So I'm glad he's with Chicago and not surprised at his production there. In Columbus, things continue to just kind of coast along as they're all hoping the season ends sooner rather than later, except maybe for Coach John Tortorella, who may want to continue coaching a little bit longer and doesn't want this season and his job there to end. 1-0-1 last week. Merzlikins continues to get the nod there for them over the like of Jonas Korpisalo, who's out. They did get Patrick Laine back. They put him on a 4th line in that return, which is a little confounding, but he did see plenty of minutes on the power play in that return, so they bolstered his minutes that way. Look, I just think this is a club looking to get things over and done with as soon as possible. There's some players here that offer some intrigue, I think, for next season as far as season-long DFS. Depending on the matchup, maybe you could look at DFS as well. But for the most part, this is an organization to kind of be avoided at this point in terms of fantasy contests.
You can't say the same about the Colorado Avalanche. They're the darlings of DFS in a lot of circles. 2-2 was their record last week, though. Mikko Rantanen with 2 goals and 3 assists. Nate MacKinnon, 2 goals, 2 assists. Landeskog, 1-2. So the top line humming along. But they're getting support from the likes of Soderberg and Timmins with a couple of assists each. Cale Makar is a guy that I think should be talked about when you talk about the best all-around and particularly offensive net defenseman in the game. An injury-marred season, but he looks to be rolling right now with another goal and 2 helpers. Even in the Nets, Philip Grubauer came out of COVID protocols to post a 21-save shutout in his return. A couple of problem spots, though, down the middle of the ice. No production at all from the center position when you consider Kadri's pointless in 11 games and Yost pointless in his last 5. So that might be a little bit of a concern that they got to right, because there's a lot of good 1-2 punches, particularly in Las Vegas, that they're going to have to deal with early on in these playoffs. So they got to get that situation sorted out. Also, they have their defense being impacted by injuries to Samuel Girard, expected to miss 2 weeks with an undisclosed injury, and Ryan Graves with an upper body hurt that's not quite so serious, and we don't have a timeline on him. Even rookie Bowen Byram has landed on the IR with upper body injury last week, so they got some things to sort out in Colorado before the serious shooting starts in a couple of weeks.
You have to be concerned about those blue line injuries. You know, it's going to open up Grubauer to see more pucks and be in trouble that way. So you definitely have to have some concerns there. They still have an offensive powerhouse and a guy like Samuel Girard, although he has been good offensively, and Cale Makar to really lead the way there. So it's not a red flag, but it's maybe a yellow, something to be cautious about and think of what's happening there. In Dallas, a 1-2-1 week was kind of overshadowed by the news last night that Tyler Seguin would be back in action, and he rolled in with a goal right away on 3 shots. Really a solid outing for him. 17 minutes of ice time, so they didn't, it's a little lower than his usual 19, but definitely didn't pull any punches in terms of, overall, like, big ice time decreases. But you have to wonder if it's a little bit too late for them. They didn't get the win last night, so that's going to compound the fact that they're trailing Nashville by 4 points. They have just 4 games remaining. They do have 1 in hand on the Predators. And I'm worried for Stars fans that it's just Tyler Seguin just like a week too late. Like if he could have come back a week ago, obviously you don't want him to rush back if he was still injured. I'm not suggesting that by any stretch of the imagination, but it feels like maybe 1 week too late to really force their way into the playoff picture. But they've got him and a chance to try and do something.
AJ, the Detroit Red Wings probably locked up a non-playoff spot several weeks ago, but Thomas Greiss was one of the three stars this past week. Consider what this guy did in two game starts, posted two shutouts. He didn't win both games. He won one and lost one in a shootout, so unfortunate turn of events there, but it just goes to show how heroic he was last week. And really, the one loss record doesn't do him any services on the season. He's been plagued by a lack of offense in front of him. This team certainly has battled hard recently, but their offensive exploits are limited by the fact that Dylan Larkin and Franz Nielsen both missing a lot of time recently and now have been ruled out for the rest of the season. So if you're looking for goalie wins, target the opposing team when the Red Wings or the Sabres play, and that's your best bet to highlight that aspect early on in this show. Despite the significant ice time in the middle of the ice in place of these two guys, Michael Rasmussen has showed well in spurts, but now is pointless in his last nine games played. Could be another issue of that rookie wall creeping up on him. Another youngster on the back end, Dennis Chalowski, though, has been a bright light and promoted to top pairing minutes with another youngster in Philip Pronick. So they're getting some pieces in order as they try to form a team that is looks to be improve in the near future. And that D pairing is one that should be a good one for years to come, in my opinion. I like a lot of the aspects that these two kids bring to the table.
Paul, we're already going to have the Washington fans coming after us. So to avoid the Red Wing fans coming after us as well, I should point out that if you look at the league standings as a whole, they're actually 26th in the league right now with 45 points. So they're not as easy as an out as, you know, Buffalo Sabres. Anaheim is down there with just 39 points. I won't include Vancouver in that because Vancouver still has, you know, like 10 games left to play. They'll work their way up a little bit. But New Jersey, Columbus, all teams below Detroit in the standings. So they're maybe not the easiest out as you make it seem, but certainly they're not one of the more difficult clubs to play with at this time. One of the teams that is really hard to play against this year is the Edmonton Oilers. Still grinding away second in the North as they try and track down Toronto again, probably a little bit too late despite a 3-1 week. Good set of outings from Mike Smith, three games started, two wins, five goals. Look, McDavid, just a ridiculous 10 points last week. I think when the season started, right, we all probably figured, all right, 56 games, like 70 points, maybe 80 points will lead the way, right? Like that seems like a reasonable number to have expected. The fact that McDavid could hit 100 here, now he's going to have to put up a couple more multi-point games. He's only got six left on the season here. But it's certainly within the realm of possibility. He's got 9 points to go to hit that 100 mark. And God, you know, Leon Draisaitl, talk about a guy. Even at the top of the show, Paul, you are, part of this as well. You know, McDavid and Matthews, you know, continue to rack up all these points, blah, blah, blah. Like Draisaitl has 73 points on the year, 24 goals, like a 1.46 point per game. And actually, in terms of point per game, he's second in the league behind Connor McDavid, of course. You know, looking at it, guys that have played in 15 or more games, there's 23 guys with 15 or more games this season that have at least a point per game pace. And those two guys leading the way in McDavid and Draisaitl. Really, this team shouldn't be in second when you consider all the offensive firepower that they've got.
Yeah, but they got holes on the blue line. And I wonder, people are looking at them as a serious contender in the North for a good reason, I think, too. But Mike Smith just playing a whale of a game every time he gets in there in the nets. His goals against average among the best in the league right now, and that's not getting talked about enough, I don't think, the year that he's been having. Because last night, you got a reminder, Mikko Koskinen was in the nets, and he let in three and on a limited workload, but certainly Mike Smith has grabbed the job with both hands, and he'll be their go-to guy in the first round. I just have a question in the back of my mind. Can a 39-year-old goalie lead the way in what looks to be a busy playoff schedule, that could be something that that the Oilers will rue before the whole season is written up. In Florida, they're in third place in a real battle in that division, in the Central Division, with a 3-1 week in the books last week. Sergei Bobrovsky's been playing very well of late, AJ. Seems to be he's got his game in order. He was in the nets for three game starts last week, picked up two wins as well. But it's Spencer Knight who's getting a lot of the headlines recently, and two game starts, two wins, and three goals against. Chris Driedger now is the topic when you're talking about possible goalies that might head out to Seattle in that expansion franchise. His name looks to be near the top of their list, and he might be the third man in the totem pole in Florida. So the tea leaves are looking like that right now to me as a destination for a guy that I have a lot of faith in terms of being a decent NHL goalie over in Seattle. Anthony Duclair had a nice week for this club with four goals and two assists leading the attack, but it's the partnership that Barkov and Huberdeau have formed, particularly on the power play. They've combined for 11 points last week. Mackenzie Weegar, 3 points on the back end, a nice week for him as he continues to fill a key vacancy in the offense from the back end with Aaron Ekblad out of the lineup. And even part-timers like Nutavara on defense, two assists, Denisenko trying to get top 6 minutes on the wing. He had two more assists, picking up a promotion from the taxi squad to all the way up to the left wing on the top line here. So that's a name that will be cheap in DFS play. And look at the partnership that he gets to play with on the top line there with Barkov, a great fit for him. Owen Tippett also gets a chance to go with Huberdeau on the second line. He had two goals and one helper last week. And the darling of the trade deadline, Bennett, continues his scoring streak. Two goals, five assists. Now has 13 points in his last nine games played with the Panthers. Carter Verhaeghe has missed 11 games played with an upper body injury. They'd love to get him back in the lineup, and it looks like they will. But he was having a career season that was marred by this hurt in the last few weeks. And hopefully he does get back, because they'll need all hands on deck to deal with Carolina and Tampa.
In Los Angeles, a decent week for them. 2-2 as Jonathan Quick reminds us that he is not over and done quite yet. Two wins, two goals allowed in his two starts. They're getting some production from Adrian Kempe, Andreas Athanasiou as well. I think the thing for Los Angeles Kings fans to watch, as they no doubt are aware, is Quinton Byfield. Hasn't scored a point yet in those four games, but with the injury to Blake Lizotte, I think this opens up the door for Byfield to play a few more games here down the stretch, get some more opportunities, and really, you know, try and see if he is full-time NHL ready. So far, I think it's, you know, no points, sure, but from what I've seen on the ice, I think he's, you know, going to be a guy that's good to go next year to be a full-time NHL player for them. Certainly a lot can change and, you know, in that amount of time, but I like the fact they've got him with Eofalo and double A on that line. I think that's a good spot for him. And I look for him to be a full-time NHLer next year.
AJ, Minnesota looks like they're closing the gap on the top two teams in the West Division. And with that offense ticking and bopping the way they are, I wouldn't like to play this team in the first round. Look at Jonas Brodin has picked up his game offensively, even from the back end with two goals and one helper. But it's Fiala with two goals and three assists. Kaprizov having an outstanding rookie season. Eriksson Ek with a couple of goals. Greenwood with a couple of assists. Even Marcus Foligno has enjoyed a productive stretch, moving up to right wing on the top line since his return to the lineup. He has now got 6 points over his last eight games, piling up 33 hits in that stretch as well, if that matters to you in your season-long pools. That question, in fact, did come up to me in one of the listener questions that I received on Twitter last week, and I touted him, and he's been rewarding the fellow that questioned me in the first place, so a happy outcome there. I think Kiprusoff has done enough to lock up the Calder Trophy partner as league's top rookie with a current stretch of 7 goals and an assist over his last 8 games. He now has 23 goals and 43 points overall. His closest challenger may be, in fact, his teammate in the Nets here, Kaapo Kähkönen, who for his part has registered 15 wins, a 269 goals against average, and a 909 save percentage. So it could be come down to the voting between the local chapter of the NHL there in Minnesota to determine who wins the Calder Trophy this season in the NHL.
Absolutely. And what Minnesota's doing here at the end of the season just really goes to show that, you know, at least for me, you know, that they're headed in the right direction, even long term, beyond just this year and what they're able to do in the postseason here. They're going to be hard pressed to get out of the West. You know, I think it's not a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination, but getting past Vegas and Colorado, who seem to be on a collision course for a huge matchup here, it does seem a bit inevitable. And obviously the Stanley Cup playoffs are a different beast and things could change. But look, at the end of the day, the fact of the matter is Minnesota's a playoff team now. And I think their future only looks brighter as they look ahead beyond this season, regardless of what may or may not happen. In Montreal, they're clinging to that fourth spot despite not having Carey Price. They went 3-1 last week. Jake Allen continues to carry the workload for them. Three games started, 2 wins, 7 goals allowed. Some offensive production coming as well for them. Nick Suzuki, 3 goals, 3 assists. Tyler Toffoli with a trio of goals as well. But I think the player we most have to talk about here is Cole Caufield, as we mentioned off the top. Back-to-back OT winners for the team. And look, again, those of us from Wisconsin, not at all surprised to see this guy producing at that level. I think we, you know, if anything, I was a little surprised it took him this long to end up in the NHL. And the thing I love about his game, look, you know, a player comes into the NHL making his debut, you might expect them to be a little tentative, comes out in that debut game, puts 4 shots on goal right away, 2 minutes of power play ice time, and has continued to just put pucks on the net. And these goals were going to come, you know, the shots 4, 2, 3, 3. And then 2 again, with those OT winners coming along the way, I think there's great things expected for Cole Caufield looking ahead.
Yeah, I've watched him closely in the last couple of games he's played. And boy, you don't notice him for large stretches of the game, but inside the opposing blue line, he's very deadly. He gets the shots on goal, finds the open spaces, and that aspect is a real knack that the top scorers do have. They find those open gaps in the defensive zone and put themselves in prime position, like last night, position 8, top of the slot, and drill the shot to the low corner to solidify that win. The game before, he raced to the front of the net to get a cross-ice pass and chip it over the goalie for a very, very nice OT winner there too. So the guy clearly has a nose for the net, and don't worry about the fact that he's a little on the smallish side. He's been fighting those odds for years, as AJ will attest, and it hasn't slowed him down at all. So I do think he's the real deal, and Montreal fans can be excited about his addition to the lineup. I wonder where Josh Anderson is, though. This guy was a menace scoring wise and physical wise with his play, but he's been MIA for me for weeks now, and still has that Cy Young kind of scoring line with 17 goals and 7 assists on the year. And you wonder if he's going to wake up in time to help this team in the playoffs. They won't go far unless they get him producing and Gallagher back in the lineup. And of course, Carey Price just started practicing too. That probably is the best news of all, as they hope to get him ready for game 1 of the postseason. They might not even finish 4th, AJ. They're making a nice push here. They're tied for 3rd right now with Winnipeg, so that's something to keep our eye on here north of the border. We'll take a break now for a couple of minutes for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with a look at the remaining teams in our weekly deep dive into key information about each roster. You're listening to Puckcast with Statchman and AJ. We'll be back in a few seconds. All right, we're back on Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, and I'll take it from here, AJ, with a look at the New Jersey Devils, 7th in the Eastern Division, a 3-0 week for a team that is not going to make the postseason. Mackenzie Blackwood receding for all those victories, so probably came in cheap in the DFS plays of the week, with only 8 goals against in total over those 3 wins. He got help from the offense, and it came in the form of 4 assists from Hughes, Ty Smith with 2 assists, McLeod with 2 assists, youngster Kuokkanen with a goal and 2 helpers, thriving in a left wing role on the top line. He now has 24 points in 45 games in his rookie season. Sharangovich is another youngster who got a lot of playing time on the right wing on the top line with 28 points in his 49 games in his rookie season. So you can see between the rookies here that I mentioned here, a whole midfield and a couple of second and third year players, their team is coming together, but I think they're still a year or two away from contention in terms of a playoff hunt. And it's largely because their defense really isn't in order, and currently that's a real issue. Their depth on the blue line is really decimated by the fact that Subban, Siegenthaler, and Tennyson, all veteran players of this team or in the NHL, are currently sidelined on the back end. Second liners have done very well of late, lighting things up and leading the offense here. The trio consists of Zacha with got 5 points, Nico Hischier with 2 goals, and Jesper Bratt with 2 goals. So another cheap DFS play if you want to lock down that second line in future plays in the near term.
The other problem here is that they're paying PK Subban to be the 50-60 point player he was when he was in Montreal. I think at this point they'd take even the 40 point player he was with the Predators. And you look at his last 2 seasons combined, he's at 37 points in 2 years. That's certainly not good enough for a guy making $9 million a year and eating up about 11% of your cap. They're going to be stuck with him for one more year. I don't think anybody's going to want to take on that deal for the amount of space that they have there. But I agree. Things are definitely looking bright for the future, but they're going to have some trouble here. That $9 million's on the books next season, and you've got Merkley, McLeod, Kukkonen, Sharangovich, Bastian, AJ Greer, who they just called up. All those guys, RFAs, going to be looking for new deals next season. So it's not going to be the toughest offseason. They already have plenty of cap space. And they're going to get 2 first-round picks this year, so that's certainly good news for them. But there are some guys that are going to need deals in the coming years, and having that $9 million on the books is certainly dragging things down for them. In Nashville, it's a decent week for goaltender UC Saros. 3 games started, 2 wins, 7 goals allowed, as they cling to that 4th spot in the Central on a 2-1 week. They got some okay production this past week from guys like Holla, 2 goals and 1 assist, Ryan Ellis with 2 goals. But really, the biggest thing for them is they're going to need production from that top line of Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Eli Tolvanen. Look, Philip Forsberg makes his return, is 2 games back from injury, got a pair of points last night, so that could be a sign of things to come for him. They're really going to need that, but not to give too much away for a preseason or a postseason preview here. But I don't expect them to get past Carolina or Florida. They'll face one of those 2 teams in the 1st round of the playoffs, and I expect it'll be probably a quick exit for the Predators.
The New York Islanders are in 3rd place in the Eastern Division. A very tight race there. They were 2-1 last week. Varlamov getting 2 game starts, both wins and both shutouts. That's 3 straight shutouts for him in that stretch, and now 7 on the season as he makes his case for Vezina Trophy contention at the end of the season. Anthony Beauvillier leading the offense with 3 goals. Matthew Barzal with a couple of goals. Josh Bailey, I've touted him as one of the better playmaking wingers, added 4 assists on the week. Brock Nelson, a guy who was more of a shoot-first center, chipped in with 3 assists. Mayfield led the blue line with 2 assists. And for me, though, Kyle Palmieri may be one of the biggest disappointments from the trade deadline. Only 1 assist in 9 games played since the trade here. And right behind him, Travis Sajak with only 1 goal and 1 assist in his 6 games played. He's even been a healthy scratch for a couple as well. So while the trade deadline was good to a number of teams, it certainly hasn't helped the Islanders cause very much. And they got to hope that situation changes. In fact, left wing was thought to be solved. Left wing issues were thought to be solved with the addition of these 2 former New Jersey Devils, but it's still a concern as it's a bit of a black hole behind Beauvillier on that depth chart.
The other concern there is Jean-Gabriel Pageau was out last night with an undisclosed injury, and that will really hurt their depth as well. Down the middle, I think that's a hard injury to kind of overcome when you already have a guy like Anders Lee sidelined. On the other side of New York here, the Rangers fifth in the East, 1-2. It's all over and done with for them. They won't make the postseason this year. Those spots have been locked up. I think, you know, the biggest thing for the Rangers is finishing out strong. And you have to consider the fact that they have been without Chris Kreider, Ryan Lindgren, Jacob Trouba, Brett Howden picked up an injury, and now they've got Artemi Panarin possibly, missing a significant chunk of time after that lower body injury last night. Even if it's something, you know, even if it was relatively minor, why force Panarin back out into games that don't matter here at the end of the season? And so I think it's, you know, probably if they're in the hunt, maybe you try and do something, but certainly not good news on the injury front. And certainly the fact that their playoff hopes were dashed last evening didn't help either.
In Ottawa, this team has been a real tough out, despite the fact that they have been trailing the division much of the season. They're in sixth place, but on win percentage, Vancouver is still ahead of them. They have some things to look forward to, though, with the development of several of their young pieces. Brady Tkachuk, for me, looks to be one of the best leaders in hockey already. A goal and 3 assists for the youngster as he continues to pile up points. Thomas Chabot had 2 goals and 1 assist last week, but suffered probably a season-ending injury with a shoulder hurt last night and in a victory over the Jets. Alex Formanton on the back end with 2 assists. 19-year-old Pinto, this kid at center, is centering vets Dzingle and Brown on a second line that looks pretty nice to me, and he's another piece that they can look forward to building their offense around. Center on the top line is Norris, 2 goals last week, winding up with 7 goals and 7 assists in his 14 games played in April. It looks like they've got a couple of real solid candidates for the top 2 center roles if these youngsters continue to produce like they have recently. Hogberg and Gustafsson, 2 other youngsters who are manning the nets because Matt Murray is back on the IR with a lower body injury. So you can see the auditions are in full swing for the youngsters who want to make the grade and make Ottawa a more significant participant in their playoff aspirations for next year.
I think the thing about Ottawa, you know, looking to the future is just, you know, getting can Matt Murray stay healthy, I think is their biggest question. And then from there, if he can stay healthy, what sort of, what can he do on the ice? Because you haven't seen a lot of him this year, and it's been hard to really gauge that. In Philadelphia, in no doubt, a disappointing season for them. 0-3 last week, although they may have shellacked the Penguins last night, for lack of a better term. Vorasek with 3 assists there. And again, this, you know, the biggest question is Carter Hart, and can he overcome what is no doubt a disappointing second season in the league and show that he really can be a number one guy for them? I think, that's the thing that they need to answer heading into next season, as well as questions about, you know, where is Shane Gostisbehere? Is he in the team? Is he not in the team? Are you protecting him in free agency or not? And trying to figure out what exactly the answer is with him, because that's not a guy that needs to be sitting on the, you know, watching from the sidelines at a $4.5 million cap hit for another 2 seasons. So I think they need to answer some questions about the ghost as well on the back end.
Yeah, he's 3 seasons removed from a 65-point campaign, has posted nothing but minuses on the plus-minus, and that's one of the reasons why they have issues with an very enigmatic player. You love the offense that he brings, but he kills you defensively, and that's been the name of the game for him for the last 3 seasons over there. In Pittsburgh, certainly their defense is in order, and that's something that you wouldn't think about first when you talk about the great 1-2 punch they have at center and some of the other guys that they've been able to put around those two pieces offensively. It's the defensive side of the puck that has the Penguins at the top of this division, AJ, and you got to be thrilled by that, but you've also got to be happy about the fact that Evgeny Malkin returned to the lineup on Monday night, returning to his center role in the second line. He'll be working between Zucker and Kapanen. That makes that a very formidable unit for me, and one that I got to look at seriously in DFS play. Kapanen himself has recently returned from the IR, has picked up 5 points in 6 games played since getting back into the lineup. I'm not going to belabor the point, AJ, anymore. I would like to ask you about how you account for the solid defensive numbers for the Pens and the fact that Jari and DeSmith have been better than I expected as a goalie tandem in this team.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, I'll give credit where credit is due. And I think that's the return of Todd Reirden to the bench has really kind of turned things around and was able to, work with these guys. At the start of the year, Mike Matheson was a defensive liability. His offensive game has always been there. He's a good skater. His ability to force the play up, move the play up the ice, I think is really good, but he would make some really bad defensive mistakes. And that hasn't been the case in the last half of the season. Now, of course, they're going to be in trouble on the back end because he's now week to week after getting hit in the face with a puck. No real details on how long he might be out. And that's going to make some difficult decisions for them because they don't right now have another, the right-handed guy to replace Matheson. Their only real option would be to bring P.O. Joseph up from the minors. Otherwise, they'll do what they did last night, have Mark Friedman playing on his offside. I should also note, as much as you'll hate to hear this, but Cody Ceci has been really, really solid defensively.
I'm sure.
And again, I point to Todd Reirden on that one because, Paul, you talked all the time. You did not like that signing by the Penguins at the start of the season, and Cody Ceci had some really disastrous bad play at times in Toronto, and that has not been the case in Pittsburgh. Basically, I don't notice Cody Ceci in a game, which is a good thing. He's not making bonehead plays, chips in offensively once in a while, but it's not what they're asking for him. So I think it's all Todd Reirden being back on the bench and working with these guys. I think that was a great hire for them. In San Jose, a 2-2 week as they continue to just putter through the rest of the season here, trying to get this one over and done with. Logan Couture, 2 goals, 2 assists. Evander Kane, 2 goals, 4 assists. So certainly there's some guys that you could use in terms of DFS contests, but overall, an over and done with season for them. Martin Jones is back and healthy, so they'll use him periodically down the stretch, as well as the youngster on the squad there. But overall, just trying to get through the rest of the season and wrapping it up, I think, is the plan in San Jose.
You chickened out. It's Joseph Kosciuszko in the nets on San Jose. He's getting a good look. He's played in 6 games, posted a 3.21 goals against average, save percentage right around 90%. Those are Marty Jones numbers, but they probably don't have to pay this guy as much. So it could be an option to consider in as part of a tandem going forward there. But a decent debut for a guy behind a very unsettled situation in San Jose. I'll give him that much for sure. And a nod to former Leaf Alexander Barabanov, who finally got his first couple of NHL goals last week, along with 2 assists in his biggest week as a pro. I'm happy to see him getting a chance because, by all accounts, he was an offensively skilled player in the KHL. Never got a chance in Toronto to flash those skills other than as a fourth liner, and that wasn't going to happen. So happy to see him getting some points out there on the left coast. In St. Louis, this is a team that finally looks like they're getting serious about playing of complete game. They're fourth in the West, overtaking Arizona. They went 2-0-1 last week. And it's a team that I knew was going to be a factor in the playoff hunt, despite the fact they were on the outside looking in for the last few weeks. But their leadership is coming to the forefront now. O'Reilly's been playing great for the last few weeks. 2 goals and 3 helpers there. Perron with 2 goals and 5 assists. Sammy Blais with 2 goals. Rob Thomas with 2 goals and 1 assist. Jordan Kyrou continues a fantastic rookie season with 2 goals and 3 helpers. You can see the offense is rounding into form at the same time as Binnington, who picked up the 2 wins and only 8 goals against in 3 starts last week. He hadn't been sharp, in fact, over his last 7 starts, allowing more than three or more goals in 6 of them. So he'd still like to get a little bit better, but I can see things turning around even for him with everything else falling into place. The one concern that I have is recent injuries have impacted the defensive depth here. We've seen that on a few teams, but Vince Dunn and Torrey Krug are right now dealing with upper body injuries, and the hope here is that they both get back in time for the postseason. They're going to need these guys because they're going to have a very tough first round matchup, I would say. And the other part that helps them is Tyler Bozak finding his game offensively, and he moved up to second line minutes. That's been a situation they've been trying to lock down all season long. Who's going to be that second line center? Bozak's making his case with 10 points in his last 10 games played.
In Tampa Bay, the obvious concern is that they have not dressed Andre Vasilevsky for the last two games. There hasn't been a lot of detail as to why he hasn't been in the lineup there, but certainly him being on the sideline is not what you want. And it's been reflected in they played two games against Detroit, a 1-0 defeat that was a shootout loss for them. They get the loss despite the fact that Curtis McElhinney actually put together a good outing, stopping all 15 shots that he faced. They come back and have a 2-1 win over Detroit as well, with they used Christopher Gibson in that contest. So getting Vasilevsky healthy is going to be the key here. But despite that, 3-0-1 last week, 5-0-1 in their last six. They don't have Steven Stamkos. They don't have Nikita Kucherov. Vasilevsky's banged up. And somehow this team continues to chug along. This is going to be a juggernaut of a playoff team when they get all those guys back. And look, you know, I was looking earlier for Vezina Trophy. If I'm looking at this, I kind of want Vasilevsky to just get one more shutout, because for me, one last shutout here would tie him with Philip Grubauer at six. He's got more wins than Grubauer, a better save percentage. The goals against average is a little bit worse. I think it's a two-dog fight between these two guys in terms of who's going to come out on top. And if Vasilevsky wants to wrap it up, one more shutout, I think, should do the trick.
Over in Toronto, this team is all but locked up first place in the North Division. They were 3-0 last week. They were on a 5-game win streak, undefeated in 6 now after the OT loss last night. And Jack Campbell, to me, has done enough to shut people up in terms of the Maple Leaf goalie situation. Look at the one loss record. I think it's 15-2-2 right now. Any team would take that. In his two starts last week, 2 more wins, 2 goals against, and last night, 3 goals against in that OT loss. So I think the goaltending question has been answered, despite the fact that Freddie Anderson just started skating again, and he looks like he's going to be ready for the postseason. I think it gives the Leafs a nice-looking 1-2 punch heading into the playoffs, and I do think that they're going to have, like many a lot of other teams, a condensed schedule, so you'll want to have that strength in the net and that depth in goal, and I think the Leafs have answered that question, so I hope there's not much more talk about that in the greater media prognostications going forward. Austin Matthews is a guy that deserves all the headlines he's getting. 4 more goals last week, another one last night. He's got 39 goals in 52 games. It's a crazy pace that would be a 60-plus goal pace, and we haven't seen that from anybody since the likes of Ovechkin and Lemieux. That's the company that Matthews finds himself in with the scoring exploits that he's come up with. It's not limited to him, though, however. Willie Nylander, 2 goals and 1 helper last week. Adam Brooks has looked really good in a fourth-line role with 2 goals. Consider his wingers are Joel Thornton and Jason Spezza. I think I would look good playing between those two guys, even if I didn't have skates on. So very lucky for him. And there was a great picture with him on the bench between those two guys. He looked like a kid at Christmas. So I'm very happy for him and the success he's having and a minimum contract. Mitch Marner is Matthews' running mate, a goal and 4 helpers. Still, to me, doesn't get the accolades that he deserves. He's in contention to be the top 5 point getter in this NHL season, and nobody's talking about him at all in any capacity other than Matthews' wingmate. He's been one of the best players in hockey again this season. Morgan Rielly starting to find his offensive game, chipping in with 3 helpers on the back end. He was in a bit of a funk, I thought, but his game is really coming together at a good time. I spoke of Joel Thornton. Consider that the 43-year-old has now got 1,100 assists in his career. That's the 7th player in the hockey history to do that. He did it on the heels of a 1 goal, 2 assist week last week. Nick Foligno had 2 assists last week, compiling a 4-game point streak, but it ended last night early on as he got hurt in that game. And there's a bit of a concern about the fact it could be a hip flexor here, but no confirmation yet. So they've got him on the sidelines. They got Hyman on the sidelines. It doesn't matter what happens over the next 4 games, folks. They got to get those two guys healthy, and the Leafs will be looking forward to getting to the end of their regular season schedule and getting ready for the postseason. It's pretty much home and cooled out, as I say. The biggest margin of any first-place team across the 4 divisions in terms of a point-scoring race, and we're all waiting for the real barometer here in Toronto. The season really doesn't start, for me, with a measurement of how good this team is until they have some playoff success, something that's been missing since 2004 here.
In any other circumstance, I would say Austin Matthews could probably just stop playing and still win the Rocket this year. Connor McDavid being 8 goals behind him, Matthews might want to play a couple games down this a game or two more just in case. But I think he should, be taking home that hardware for sure at the end of the season. A team that won't be taking away any hardware at the end of this year is the Vancouver Canucks. Yes, they have a ton of games in hand, could still sneak into the playoffs, but an 0-4 week is not going to help that happen. They're just not clicking on all cylinders right now. I will give them a little bit of leeway when you consider the number of forwards that they have out of the lineup. Some of these are more depth guys. Obviously, they've been without Elias Pettersson for a while. Brandon Sutter picks up an injury. Tyler Mott, Anton Roussel out as well. Jake Bertan and Justin Bailey. Like, the list has gotten to the point where you do have to give them a little bit of leeway, I think. But unfortunately for them, it's going to be, a tough end to the season, I think. And they're probably going to be playing games after the playoffs have already started just to finish out the season here and get all their games in. But I just don't see how they could track down, even with those huge games in hand. Yes, it's still mathematically possible, but they're way far back from Montreal for that last spot.
Over in Vegas, they're first in the West. Sure, the record is 2-1. Fleury in nets, two game starts, 2 wins, and 4 goals against. I know my partner's going to have some more to say about him in a rebuttal to my comments. Max Pacioretty came back from a brief scare, but he's got another one to deal with. 2 goals, 2 assists last week. Mark Stone with 2 goals and 2 helpers. Marchessault, 2 goals and 1 helper. Carlson with 2 goals. So you can see the top 6 forwards are well represented in their scoring exploits. Alex Pietrangelo hasn't had the offensive season that I thought he might here, but picked up 2 helpers last week. I think his overall game, though, is in good shape, and that's going to be a key factor in how successful they are in the postseason. But another one is the health of their bottom 6, and it took a blow last week with Nosek and Roy expected to miss some time with undisclosed injuries. They've got to have those veterans in tow to hope for a long run here, I think. You don't want to go into the playoffs without a healthy lineup, and they're challenging this way. I'm still confused, AJ, with the lack of success that Riley Smith is having in terms of a low-end offensive campaign, when you consider Marchessault and Carlson have continued to rock and roll with their regular scoring exploits all season long. Riley Smith trails them by a significant amount, despite the fact they're on the ice together all the time. So in any case, I know you're anxious to speak about your favorite goalie.
Well, I'll start by pointing out to the fact they've been going with an every other goalie rotation since late March. The end of March, the 25th, 27th, was the last time any netminder for them played 2 games in a row. So they've been doing every other. But after the disaster that Robin Leonard put up last night, you have to wonder if they'll consider changing that. It'll be interesting to watch how the rest of the way goes. And I'll be honest, I think these guys are in a dogfight to figure out who's going to be the starting goaltender for the postseason. I doubt they're going to rotate in the playoffs. I guess they could, but I doubt they're going to. What Paul is alluding to, for those of you who may not be aware, is Marc-Andre Fleury is currently tied now with Roberto Luongo for third most wins in NHL history among netminders. So one more win, he'll move into second place. And as much as I would love to see Fleury continue to play for, seasons on end, I think this is probably where we'll see him wind up. One more win, we'll put him at 490. That's still 61 behind Patrick Waugh, and just a ridiculous amount behind Marty Brodeur, who's at 691 for the overall. So I think this is probably where Fleury's final number will end, whatever it ends up being. Maybe he pushes 500, but I think he'll end up third overall on this list, and he's in position to move into that spot in their next game here. We'll talk about Washington because we have to. I'm sick of the team right now. I do have to give them a little bit of credit for pulling off the win last night. Consider the fact that they lost Ovechkin again. He was coming back. He gets hurt in his first shift last night. TJ Oshie was out of the lineup for you know, for personal reasons. Kuznetsov was held out for disciplinary reasons. Ilya Samsonov gets essentially put on the taxi squad so that Craig Anderson could serve as the backup last night for similar disciplinary reasons. So they're missing some pretty big pieces there. And so they, you know, pulling off the win last night is a pretty big deal. What happens with Ovechkin is going to be the biggest thing for this team to monitor. How serious is that injury? Do they just shut him down for the rest of the regular season? Obviously, the playoffs are the priority, but you got to, you know, you would think they got to fight for first. John Carlson did come back last night, so that's key. And some of this could factor on how long Tom Wilson is suspended here. I suppose I should say if he's suspended, but I would hope to God he is, and the league doesn't just overlook that. And so that could force their hand a little bit as well in terms of what they're going to do. So a lot of question marks with Ovechkin being hurt again. You know, TJ Oshie, was this just a one-game thing? Or are we looking at, you know, he's going to have to take a little bit more time away for whatever reason? That's a factor as well here.
You know, this team was cruising along in first place or very near first place all season long, and they picked the absolute wrong time to show these undisciplinary activities that have dotted the news stories coming out of Washington for the past 7 days and even in the course of last night's game. It's not stuff you want to see from a team as they get ready for the postseason, and not the way they want to be going into that postseason run either, particularly in such a competitive loop. I think they've done their playoff chances a tremendous disservice over the last 7 games, and I don't see a long playoff run in Washington as a result. In Winnipeg, this team was hoping for a long playoff run, but they too might fit the same mold except for the disciplinary activities. They've been pretty straight up in losing their last 7 games after another defeat last night against Ottawa. Look at what Connor Hellebuyck has done. In the last 3 games he played, 0 is the win total, 12 goals against overall. And even if you look at a bigger clip than that, it's 21 goals against in his last 6 games played. If he doesn't get settled down, this team goes nowhere. They could even slip to fourth in the division and face a quick playoff exit anyway. They're going to get either Toronto or Edmonton, and those high-octane offenses against a team that's giving up as many goals and shots as Winnipeg is right now is not long for the postseason, in my estimation. They suddenly find themselves in that third-place tie with Montreal as a result of their recent faltering play, and it hasn't helped that they've been missing Blake Wheeler, but at least he got back in the lineup, chipped in a goal and 2 helpers last week, and they got some goals from Trevor Lewis in a bottom six role that looked nice. But bigger concern, again, is Pierre-Luc Dubois slumping offensively. He has only 3 assists in his last 10 games played, 11 now, and that's not at all fitting into the offense like I expected that he would. And on the back end, Neil Pionk, their top offensive blue liner, has struggled of late with no points during the club's current losing streak, so they got a lot of question marks here. It's teams in the W part of the alphabet that give us, maybe we give them an F rating for the way they're going right now, AJ, and that's the way we'll end up our look at the 31 teams. And let's slide over now into our DFS segment, and I publicized on my Twitter feed a couple of big wins that I had last week. I'm rolling along, AJ, and people that follow me could have played those lineups and won some big money in the past week. I finished in the top 10 in tournaments twice, and I have never done that before. So I'm pretty excited about putting together another lineup tonight. Before I do that on FanDuel's platform, why don't you tell us what you've done on DraftKings for this evening's contests?
Well, so I found myself in an interesting position, and I'll walk through our listeners on how I built my lineup here. So the first thing I wanted to do, with the embarrassment that happened last night for Pittsburgh, I expect them to be motivated to come out strong in tonight's game. And so I want to go with the second line. That's Evgeny Malkin for 6,300, Kasperi Kapanen for 3,700, and Jason Zucker for 3,000. Zucker comes in super cheap. He did pick up a point last night. I think that could be a sign of things to come here for him, especially with Malkin back in the lineup. So I really wanted to use that entire line. The other team that is, I think, going to be motivated playing on the second night of a back-to-back after a disappointing win is the New York Islanders. And again, I really like their second line here of Brock Nelson at 4,100 Anthony Beauvillier at 4,000 and Justin Bailey at 3,100. All these guys have put up decent. I think they're underpriced and have a phenomenal matchup. As far as the net mining, I'm going to go with Tristan Jarry for 7,900 because obviously if I'm stacking one of those lines for me, based on the fact that I'm stacking a Pittsburgh line and an Islanders line, it makes the most sense to use one of those two netminders, obviously. So I'm going to use Jarry tonight at 7,900. This left me so much money left over that I started by, I was just going to pay up big on the blue line. And I'm going to start with Dougie Hamilton. Carolina has a great matchup tonight with Chicago, 6,900. He's the big price tag for them. I can also use Chris Letang at 5,800. I think the number one power play for Penguins did score last night. I think a good opportunity for him to pick up some points. Now you put all together, Paul, my lineup came in $5,200 in remaining salary.
Wow.
So I took a look at what I could do with that. And if I take Nelson out, I can replace him with Connor McDavid. No problem. So that's what we're going to do tonight. I built my lineup to what I really liked. But I found myself taking a ton of value plays along the wingers there. And so I'll substitute Connor McDavid in. So as a full roundup at center, I've got Malkin and McDavid. The three wing spots are Beauvillier, Kapanen, and Zucker. Dougie Hamilton and Chris Letang on the blue line. Justin Bailey comes in as my utility spot there. And Tristan Jarry between the pipes. So some last minute, I just thought that was an interesting tweak. I built my lineup the way I liked it, had just so much money left remaining. I had to go get Connor McDavid to put up, 20, 30 points, whatever it is.
Well, AJ, I'm going to go with a contrarian play that I'm going to put in a couple of tournaments tonight, and it doesn't feature Connor McDavid. I've been tracking his ownership and it's ridiculous. It's like upwards of 70%. In FanDuel play on a regular basis whenever this guy suits it up. So I'm hoping that somehow, some way, he's shut down in Vancouver in the rematch this evening and that he doesn't make a lot of noise. And so I'll start my lineup, and I'm building it kind of with a look toward topping totals with good first-line centers. Matthew Barzal is one choice that I make. He's got a matchup against Buffalo. I told you, I'm gonna hammer whoever plays Buffalo and Detroit whenever they're in the lineups for our game plays. And Barzal fits the mold today for me, priced in at only $6,600. That's a price point that is familiar to people in FanDuel for finding low-end value at the center position. And that is going to afford me a chance to pay up elsewhere. But I partner him with Sebastian Aho, and I put Aho in the center role because he's been a consistent scorer for weeks now, and he's got his running mate back in the lineup, Toivo Teravainen. And get this, his price tag is a paltry $5,600, despite the fact he's already shown that he's back in scoring form with the production that he had last week. So a dynamic duo in Carolina facing off against Chicago, a team that is a bit floundering with the defensive stats and the goalie stats that we highlighted earlier. I take a page from you when I look at a couple other wingers that I want in the lineup tonight. I agree with you. Pittsburgh's looking to make noise and respond to the drubbing they took last night. And I am going to take the second-line wingers too. Zucker and Kapanen in my lineup this evening, priced at $4,700 and $4,500 respectively. That's on the lower end of the price table and pretty good value for second-line wingers in my estimation going forward. I lied to you. I am picking Connor McDavid. I wanted to see if you would actually believe that I would keep him out of the lineup, AJ, and you didn't react, but I did put him in there for $9,300. I got him in a utility spot there and rounding out my offense. And then Shane Gostisbehere is the defenseman that I'm going to show some faith in tonight just because I do think that's going to be a high-scoring game, and his offensive game has come together in the last week looking a bit like I expected he could when he's on top of his game. He seems like it, at least at one end of the ice. And a guy that needs to be on top of his game in Boston is Charlie McAvoy, and I price him in at $4,800. They do on FanDuel. I'll take that. Two defensemen that figure to be on offensive side of the puck, a combined $8,500 spending for them. And you talked about the goalie from Boston, figures to be Swayman tonight, and I'm taking a share of him in this action against New Jersey. He's priced in at sub $8,000, which is bargain for a goalie who's favored in a matchup and should be heavily favored considering the number of injuries that the Devils are facing today. And so I think I got another shot to be in the winner's circle, quite frankly, and I hope our listeners pay attention because I know you've been hot too. So good for us and good for those people who are listening to this segment as we wind up the show, AJ. Any final thoughts? I know you're steaming about the Washington situation, so we'll stay away from that. I want to see you smile as we sign off. So anything else that catches your attention among the headlines maybe that we highlight at the top or anything else they want to talk about?
Well, I was just going to add, you know, last week I did toss your lineup into the nickel contest on FanDuel. Just, you know, a little bit of faith in you, Paul. Certainly paid off well, considering I was only paying a nickel. So I'm going to pay up a little bit higher this week, Paul, give you a little more faith. I'm going to go a full $2 on your lineup tonight, boy. Paul. So we'll see what happens. Probably going to, you know, probably jinxing you and maybe our listeners. I figured it's important for them to know that, so maybe they don't want to use your lineup tonight just because I'm jinxing it by spending a little more on it.
All right, partner. Well, we only got a couple more weeks in the regular season. The playoff races will be settled probably next time we talk next week, and we'll start paying more attention to those possible playoff matchups at that point. But it's a fine place to wrap up this week's Look Around the League on Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. It's RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey pod. Please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen into Puckcast to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.